Welcome to the Everyday Board Game Podcast with your hosts, Daniel.
And Daniel.
Welcome back, Daniel.
No. Welcome back to you. I never left.
That's true. We had a couple weeks where my whole workload was just absolutely insane. Thank you to Bryce for filling in my end. Those might be the episodes I finally watch. You know, I've never been a big fan of the channel. You know, it's not that great. They don't make much good content, but that, with Bryce being a co-host, I bet it's fantastic.
Well, we are growing on the YouTube platform, so I can't deny the Bryce factor.
Yeah, we had the Bryce factor. That's what we'll call it. But we'll notify him that he was essentially the Bryce factor, and therefore we're gaining our viewership. I apologize for this week. That'll now probably be a dud because I've returned. I hope that's okay. But I was the creator of the channel, so... Huh, we'll do it anyway.
Yeah.
It's good to be back, Daniel.
Bryce will be helping us out from time to time. I know I got some stuff going on here in a couple months, so there may be time where I can't record, so there's that.
That's right. Yep, that's right. It could be. No, I'm looking forward to it. I may or may not be able to record next week. I'll talk with you with that later. We'll figure it out. But it's good to be back. I'm excited about this. I've had so many of the previous episodes that Bryce thankfully was able to fill in for us, and I end up making my list, but I just couldn't do it. I had too much to do.
Understandable. I mean, that's why we brought Bryce on, to help us out. We are thinking about changing our banner and stuff like that, instead of it saying Daniel and Daniel on it, just to say Everyday Board Games for that reason, just in case we have to bring someone in to fill in.
Yeah, exactly. It just won't have the catchiness of welcome with your host, Daniel and Daniel, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it.
We'll have to scratch out one of the Daniels and put Anne Bryce. And then he'll just wear that shirt. We'll just send him one of the two. For whichever backup we need. Convenient. Oh, well, have you been playing games lately? Let's talk about this for a little bit.
I played some games this past weekend, got together with some friends of ours and played some games. And of course, I actually been playing Gloomhaven with the wife, but mostly I think I've only played three games, Gloomhaven. And then we played some Silver and Gold, and what's the other one I played? Dragonwood, just because we went over to go swimming. So we played a couple games before we got into the pool while we were eating lunch and stuff like that. But all in all, it's just been... playing Mass Effect, the Legendary Edition just dropped. I talked about it a little bit last week, and that's been taking over my time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't blame you. Darn one-player games. Who needs those? Speaking of one-player games, though, Box One by Neil Patrick Harris. Have you heard of it?
No, I have not.
Phenomenal. You know how much I like escape rooms and puzzles and all that stuff, right? One of the best, if not the best, escape room in a box that I've ever played. That's a really high accolade. I can't tell you how much it is. It's an escape room designed for one person. It's kind of an escape room. And the things that it does is brilliant. I won't spoil it. I just want to tell you right now, Daniel, go get it. If you haven't played it, or I can lend you my copy. You just sit down by yourself, have a few hours, you're going to have an absolute ball with it, I think.
It sounds pretty cool. I know I'm super excited for the Goonies game that was just recently announced to be coming out this summer. By Prospero Hall, no less. So it's just and they say Prospero Hall. I'm like, I'm interested. I even want to try the Fast and the Furious game, and I'm not even a fan of the franchise.
Yep, I was thinking the exact same thing. I was going to bring that up had you not. Because, that game looks fun, and I don't know why. It looks
quite interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and it's rare that Prospero Hall lets me down, so let's give it a shot, and let's see what happens. Oh, man, yeah, I actually got some games played as well. This last Friday, which used to be my weekly game night, I was so excited because all of my friends who normally come over for Friday night game night, we're all fully vaccinated, we're all good to go. We've gotten CDC orders saying you're allowed to go back to what you're doing if you're all fully vaccinated. There's only four or five of us. 4 a.m. is when everybody finally left. 4 in the morning. That's how much apparently we all missed it. We played like 6 games. It was so good.
Dang.
Yeah.
I played 3 games of Gloomhaven, that in like the 2 smaller games I mentioned. So I played 5 since Wednesday.
5. No, we played. We had to do it. We played One Key, which is cool. It's kind of like a Mysterium game. It does some neat things. That's different. But I don't know if I'm going to keep it forever. It's pretty good, though. God, we played so many good stuff. Some of them were just, like, back-to-basic games, you know, like ones that we had played a long time. We played Bullet. That was really fun. I got to teach some Quacks of Quedlinburg for the first time, which they had never played.
Nice.
And, you know, I'll give props to Quacks of Quedlinburg, because that was one of the few games where they actually, like, and I'm going to blame them. They spaced out during part of the rules. And they were only pressing their luck to a total of 7 or 8 or more total chips, not just cherry bombs, but just total. And they were like, kind of like, how are you getting so many? You have like 15. I'm like, I only have like 4 white chips. That's it. And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, look, the thing I pointed on, it says, higher than 7 white chips. And they're like, oh. Huh. And they still caught up to me. Halfway through the game, it didn't matter. They still caught up to me. And they're like, okay, yeah, it's fun. I'm like, because I told them, I was like, in all honesty, I've seen this before. Just because I'm ahead right now does not mean I'm going to win.
In fact, yeah, no, it's happened several times since we played.
Yeah, yeah. Almost always, I'm a long leader, and then whoop, everybody just jumped right past
me. It's funny, in our game group, it actually has a nickname to that. It's called the Dom Effect, because and it all started, we've told the story before, it all started when we were playing Lewis and Clark over Board Game Arena, mm-hmm. and our mutual friend Dom went all the way back to basic New Orleans. You and me were up in the mountains, and then he just, like, I don't know, he got a motorboat or something and just sped right past us.
Right? Yeah, we have no idea. It was a human cannonball at some point. It was bizarre.
And he's done that so many times to us that it has its own.
Right? It has its own thing. It's like, yeah. It's like, I feel like not scoring points for the first half of the game, because why not? Let's see if I can still win. And yet he does.
Yeah. It. What does that say about us as board game players?
We're consistent. If nothing else, we're consistent. It's about the best I can say, though. Oh, goodness. So, Daniel, we're going to do this a little differently this week, right?
Yes. We
did not post it on Facebook, so let's hope there's no ties. I don't think there will be. But
I don't think there will be.
Yeah, it'll be pretty straightforward. But we're going to be doing a top 8 debate for Cthulhu Mythos games. But before we do that, normally this time we would talk about all of the people's honorable mentions that they added to the list, which we can always assume is Cthulhu, Death May Die, you know, other games that you would imagine are obligatory Cthulhu games. They're probably on the list. We've talked about them many times before in other honorable mentions lists. But there was an announcement recently that we want to bring up and we want to discuss for a little bit before we do so. Take it away.
So the 2021 Spiel des Jahres were just recently announced. Now, that's a major gaming award, especially in the European countries, for Germany, mind you. That's something you actually look forward to every year. That's your board gaming Christmas, is when those are announced. Yes, and sir. So we got 6 games loaded over here. 3 are for the Spiel des Jahres, and 3 are for the Kinderspiel. We're going to talk a little bit about each one of those. And honestly, I've played 2 of the 6 games. Yeah. I didn't even know one of them until it was announced, and that's actually my pick to win.
Yeah, exactly. we'll go into it. Let's talk about the Kennerspiel first, because the Spiel, I'm going to have a lot to say, but the Kennerspiel, these are the ones that we've both played 2 of the games.
Yeah. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with the one that we played the most of. Well, I played the most. I played Lost Ruins of Arnak, I want to say 2 or 3 times now.
Okay.
It's a heavy Euro game. I mean, it's probably not that heavy, but it's medium heavy, depending on who you ask. No, it's a heavy Euro game. It's definitely the heaviest of the three.
It really is.
Yeah. I have a quarrel against this game. I like it. I've enjoyed playing it. My quarrel is one small little argument against it. And that's because you have no fewer than like 6 or 7 different resources, which is just too many. You have compasses, you have coins, you have tablets, you have arrowheads, you have everything else. And then the cards, you use coins to get cards, tools, you use compasses to get artifacts, and then you use tablets to activate those. Oh, and then you have rubies, and then you have assistants, but then your cards have boats, or they have
planes,
or footsteps, or they have, I don't know, dune buggies. I forget what the other one is. Boats or something else on that level. But so there's so many, technically there's so many different resources that you're melding with. And the only thing is that, like, I mean, Euro games get a lot of guff for being not thematic. I personally don't understand why the tech tree, which works in the game, it's like, well, why does this one take a ruby and this one takes a tablet and 2 arrowheads? Like, there's no explanation for any of that.
This technically is, we talk about it all the time when we play games. This one tends to be more mechanistic than actual thematic. There is theme, don't get me wrong. This is probably one of the few Euros with this style that the theme matches, I guess you can say, but it's not as painted on as some others is the best way to describe it. Not as painted on. But other than that, I liked it. I enjoy playing it. And this is one that's always compared with Dune, Imperium.
Yeah.
And so they're both really good. They both really do the worker, not the worker, the worker placement deck building combo. Mm-hmm. But this one, I had a couple issues with it as well. Just the fact that, yeah, you could do all this, but honestly, your best bet to get a good amount of points is making sure your magnifying glass goes up the thing and you're the first one on the list, rather than worrying about your book coming up, because all that really does is help you upgrade your workers or your assistants, I think is what they're called. And even then, they do some cool stuff, but they're not all that great compared to trying to get points elsewhere. The fighting of the monsters, it's good, but it doesn't give you a lot of points. You get a little reward for it, but I don't know. I liked it. I enjoyed it. There is some issues, and we talk about this a lot, especially when it comes to ease of play in a top 8 debate. It's the iconography. There is a lot that you have to remember.
Yeah.
A lot.
But the good thing is about that is that all of the icons more or less are the resources, right?
Yeah.
In a way. Unless you're talking about like the level 1 or 2 campsites, then that's another icon. Unless you're talking about upgrading resources, which I hate that icon. It has like the 3 resources and an up arrow swinging out. Like, what is this? Like, I mean, I get it. You're upgrading, but oh my goodness, that's a terrible icon.
And the other thing that really drives me insane about Arnak, and I've mentioned this before in the past podcast, is that you have all these nice, you got these nice rubies, you got these nice arrowheads, you got these nice tablets, and then the compass and coins are cardboard.
Yeah. Well, so I believe that now I've seen a lot of people 3D print compasses and then fill in like resin or plastic. Now, I'm not going to lie. If you take a look at this, this is for the assistant tray and this is 3D printed as well. And it's super cool looking. There's a deluxe insert that they have on Thingiverse for people to print. Now, I don't own the game. I'm printing that for a friend, but I mean, the pieces are phenomenal in that. And you know, you got to say this game has its followers, right? Out of all 3 of these games, this is probably the one that I hear the most people raving about.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. This is the one that really gets talked about a lot, especially because, again, it gets compared to Dune Imperium a lot. But I don't think this is going to win the Kenner.
I don't. I don't either. Let's talk about the next one that neither of us have played, Paleo.
What are your thoughts on Paleo? I want this game so bad. I know a little bit about it. I know that you have to make choices. It's co-op. if I remember correctly. And so you're working as a clan of Neanderthals, I guess you can say, early humans as well, or early humans, and you're hunting, you're trying to get the most resources and help feed your clan and all sorts of different things, but you're having to work together as a group to do it because you're hunting mammoth, basically. My God, this game looks fun. I want to try it. I want to play it. And I will say it, it's got some of the best art out of all of these games that are we're talking about today, the Spiel des Jahres or the Kinderspiel.
Yeah, definitely. No, I do agree with you. This one I want to play really badly. I've heard everything from like decent reviews to overwhelming reviews. And it's just really like what it is. It's a card play game, but it's cooperative and it's set in the Stone Age. That hasn't happened yet that I'm aware of. It could have, but definitely it didn't get as big as this. And this is Hans and Gluck's first cooperative game, which they've been around for decades, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, talking about back in the day with Carcassonne, you know, now they finally decided, oh, let's make a co-op game for once. So I don't know what made them shift that, but it looks really intriguing. So now let's talk about the one we have played, the final one in the Kennerspiel, and that was Fantasy Realms. Easily the lightest of the three. This is literally
so.
Play a card or draw a card, play a card, I believe.
Yeah. And it's basically you're trying to get like sort of like a set collection type thing. You're trying to meet an end game goal.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or each card scores in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, so like some will score based on faction, some will score if you have another card, some will pair up, some will do like combinations, and they each have like cool little abilities that as you play them, that's when you get to use them. It's neat. I like it a lot. You and me were kind of drooling to play it again after we played it the first time.
Yeah, no, it was really good. It played quickly, too. I think we were finished with it in like 15 minutes. And that's with us learning the game. And just like, oh, this card really goes well with this. And then I got the candle, and it worked really. And I ended up winning that way, I believe. I remember getting the thing I needed to go with the candle and ended up winning the game that way. It's very good. I really enjoy it. This is my pick to win the Kinderspiel. With Paleo being my dark horse.
My vote is for Paleo. And we're going to give a shout out. Hi, Creative Chaos. Yep. Cthulhu Mythos Games. Yeah, absolutely. My vote is for Paleo. And not because I think that the other ones are worse. I almost think that, and this is just an assumption, I think that the Spiel des Jahres got a lot of guff last year for the crew getting or winning the Kennerspiel. Because everyone agreed that should have won the Spiel. Not saying Pictures is bad. Pictures is really fun. But really, it's not like the crew is that complicated. Well, this, I think, is easier than the crew, in a way. And sure, it's more complicated to pick up the cards and get the combinations. But functionally, like, if you don't have that campaign, I think it's too easy. And I don't know if they're going to go for the easiest game there. Because that was followed up by Wingspan before that.
Yeah, honestly, though, I don't think they care what other people says. Honestly, they'll take the guff. They've been taking the guff for the last, I don't know, three years when they've gone really lighter with the Spiel des Jahres winners.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Just One and Codenames was another,
mm-hmm.
as well as, what was last year's?
Pictures. Pictures,
yeah. Yeah, so I really don't think they care. They're going to go with what they think is the better game, and Fantasy Realms has a high following.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we'll just have to see then.
To the point, Stonemaier Games made their own version of Fantasy Realms based off a book series.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And that's surprising because that's worth pointing out. Fantasy Realms came out like 4 years ago, but it finally came into Germany. So that's why. It's finally eligible.
And the thing with the German or the Spiel des Jahres and the Kinderspiel, they have to be in Germany just to get nominated. So since they just came out over there, that's why they get the nomination.
Exactly. But Germany is like a hub for games. So that's a perfect transition into the Spiel winners, because the first one I want to talk about is specifically one that is not in English yet. And that's Adventures of Robin Hood. So the Spiel des Jahres is the family game of the year, or the German game of the year, as they call it. Listen to this description. Have you heard anything about Robin Hood yet?
somewhat. I've only seen the cover, really. I've seen a couple when, like, the mechanism is a campaign. That's about it.
Right. So the first thing that I want to point out, it's by Michael Menzel, art and game design. He is known
Legend of Andor.
Legends of Andor, exactly. And Legends of Andor is a really cool campaign game, but it's like solving a puzzle. It's neat. So I'm going to read this real quick, the description online, because I think this will make you intrigued, to say the least. In England, in 1193, I'm going to skip that. The Adventures of Robin Hood. Players take on the role of Robin Hood and his companions, with the action taking place in the living game board. With no set paths, the board changes over the course of each outing. The movement of the characters is handled via an innovative mechanism that uses different wooden pieces. Various actions and secrets are integrated into the game levels and are revealed only through the course of the story. The game board remembers what players have already explored or found, and thanks to the special materials, the entire game can be set up and dismantled quickly. The game has a save state. An internal save state. And then, instead of using cards as the author's Legend of Andor, the game tells the story of Robin Hood in a high-quality hardcover book, and depending on the decisions the players make, the story changes.
So what you're saying, it's a choose-your-own-adventure game.
Kind of. It's either a choose-your-own-adventure, or it's like a legacy campaign story thing. And I like Robin Hood. I love that like King Arthur, Robin Hood, like all of the medieval like folklore. I love that setting.
I enjoy it. The Robin Hood story, the actual story itself, is a lot different than what we're familiar with. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit on the darker side, I guess you can say. This sounds
back
interesting.
Back in the day when it was good.
Yeah. this is quite interesting. It does sound pretty cool. I would play it. I would have fun with it more than likely. I don't know. I wish it would come out in English soon.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to translate, I'm sure. And I get it. Like, James and Cosmos, which I think is who this is through, they're kind of known for
Cosmo.
You know, they always start in Germany, and it takes quite some time.
A little bit. You know what this almost sounds like to me? If it wasn't a Cosmo game, I think this would have been an app integrated board game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
this easily could lend itself to app integration.
Yeah, which is ironic because Tames and Cosmos, they make a lot of like science kits and like toys and like, you know, like the games aren't their only line, you know.
No, and games so are just totally part could. Of their line. They're all about toys and science and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, making your brain smarter, goodly. Yes, that's how they work. Next one is kind of a weird one. It was Micro Macro Crime City. What do you know about this one, Daniel?
Now, this one intrigues me because it's basically, for what I've looked up, this one I have looked up because I saw about talking about it, and it's like they made a board game out of Where's Waldo. You're going around, you're making, it's a campaign game or a legacy game. The next one we're going to talk about is the legacy game. But this one's like a campaign game. You're going around trying to solve crimes. By trying to find it out on this really giant map that you have to take out every time you're doing it. No. So from my understanding about this, this is a really dark game. I don't know if you want to play a lot of times with your younger children. Like, this is supposed to be a family game, but a lot of these cases involve murder.
And one of the cases is literally find the dead body. Like, that's all it is. Just find the dead body. Like, that's kind of dark, but...
Yeah, it's bit dark, but from everything I heard, people really like this one.
Yeah. You know, this reminds me of an old Spiel winner, and I don't know if a lot of people remember this. It's a Sherlock Holmes consulting detective. And so, if you think about it, that gives you a giant map of London, and really, it's not super necessary in the game. But you can kind of keep track of, like, where you've been and what you've done. But really, the map is just kind of there for reference, and you're reading books. This is kind of like a more integrated version of that. So if they're trying to go back to their roots, you know, this might not be a terrible option. It also has a little bit of Scotland Yard, which won in like the 1980s.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. This is actually my pick to win the Spiel des Jahres, just with everything I've heard and the grumblings. I could see Adventures of Robin Hood basically being my dark horse and coming out with it and winning. Mm-hmm. But I've seen other people say, including the Dice Tower, they gave the love to Legends of Andor, so they might give the love to someone else this time around. And I'm just, when the Spiel was came out, this is the groundswell one I heard a lot about.
Yeah. The last of the three is called Zombie Teens Evolution, which is a sequel to Zombie Kids Evolution. Now, I don't think you've played either. I've only played Zombie Kids because I bought it specifically during the lockdown. I think this was one of the first games I bought after everything was locked down. And that's because I wanted to spend more time with my kids and playing a game like this. And Zombie Kids is a tower defense game where zombies are moving around and you're just trying not to run out of zombies. If you run out of zombies and you can't place them, you lose, effectively. That's about it. All you do is just take a couple actions, which is either move and then remove up to two zombies, and then that's it. This takes that same idea and makes it like more of a game. They're kind of like spiraling around the board, trying to get into the center, moving around the areas. There's neat components, but what most like, or the most interesting part of it, is that it's like it has 14 envelopes, 10 of which are unlocked throughout the course of the game as you play, and 4 of them are achievements, where if you gain certain achievements, then you unlock those as well. It's basically a kid's legacy game. The original one was super easy. This one I haven't played. It looks fun, and I did buy it because I know how much I think my kids would like it. But my kids were dwelling on the original one, Zombie Kids, and getting pretty bored because of, we pretty much solved it. And we were just waiting. We were playing it to unlock stuff, but there were times that we played it where we're like, we're just grinding now, like in like a video game. Yeah.
It sounds interesting. I don't know if it would catch my attention. If your kids were getting bored with it, I think I'd get bored with it.
Well, they were getting bored with Zombie Kids Evolution.
Oh, that's true. Oh. But this is, and it's just more of a more higher family rate. I don't know much about it, though. That's the issue.
Yeah. I'm excited to play this. I'll have more thoughts on it. Hopefully, I'll get it played before the Spiel nominees are announced. And that would be cool. But
these are the nominees. You mean the winners?
Or when the winner is announced, right? Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with Creative Chaos. Yeah, grinding on things for board games, it isn't as fun. And that's because, so the way it works is it has basically a time track on the back of the manual, and you get a sticker for every time you play it. But then you also get another sticker for every time you win. So the more you win, the faster it goes. But if you're terrible at the game and not planning it, that's gonna just, every time you play, you have to play 4 or 5 times at least to unlock the next envelope. And so, I don't know, it's weird. Legacy style games have been nominated before with My City. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see if it goes through. I'm not sure, but I'm excited to play it because I've been looking forward to a gamer version of Zombie Kids.
Yeah, I can see why they got bored as well. The grinding part of it, especially, your kids aren't that young, but still, I don't think it would challenge your son, really, especially with the way he thinks.
No. It was mainly just me and my daughter played it, and that was about it. But, it would reward you. Like, if you unlock certain things, like when you play with 4 players, when you play with 3 players, when you played with, like, 6 unique players, because you keep track of who you played with each time, you know, like, you get unlocks and stuff. So it kind of encourages you to try in different ways. It's okay.
So what's your pick?
What it is. Yeah. It's fine for what it is. That's all that matters. All right. Now, are you ready to go into the tentacles? Blah, blah,
blah. Yeah, we'll go to that in a minute. What's your pick on the Spiel? What do you think is going to do it?
Oh, I was trying to avoid it. Okay. Judging from what I've seen, my vote is going to be the simplest of the three, and that's probably Micro Macro. Even though it is kind of dark, I mean, but yeah. The other one's zombies. So, I mean, how dark?
No, I agree with you. That's my pick as well. It's micro macro. It just it's at the rate they've going, they usually go with the simplest game. Well, yeah,
pretty much. So why not Where's Waldo the board game, right? It's simple.
Exactly.
But I'll make a further pick and elaborate on it once I played Zombie Teams and see how that evolves a little bit.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes. Let us know. But let's get into Cthulhu Mythos Games, the top eight debate.
Yeah, how have we not done this already?
Because most of the games are Fantasy Flight, and we already did a Fantasy Flight version of it.
Solid argument, and we're going to be arguing about, you know, no fewer than four of the eight games have the word madness in the title. So,
yeah,
need we say more? So we'll talk about all the madness and the horror.
That's what some people say about our podcast.
Oh, madness and horror. Yeah. That's going to be our, and this is anything with the Cthulhu theme integrated with the game. It's actually a category on Board Game Geek where you go into any one of these games, they'll say Cthulhu Mythos. And that's going to be the list. There was like thousands and thousands of games listed, but a lot of them were just like different versions of
already basic games. Yeah. And which we have one of them on here.
Yep. Which we do. And it's more of an expansion, but it's an expand alone too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And utter madness. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, so it's going to be interesting, as always, on the YouTube side of things, as well as the audio side, a link to the actual Board Game Geek website where we got it will be in the description below.
Yeah, sounds good. So our first one, our number one seed, Mansions of Madness.
Second edition, going up against our 8 seed, Tower of Madness.
Tower of Madness. Doesn't need a multiple neighborhood, all right? It's just the Tower of said madness. Our number two seed, Eldritch Horror.
Versus our 7 seed, Mountains of Madness.
That's going to throw us off, isn't it?
We better wait till it's like 1 versus 7, Mansions of Madness versus Mountains of Madness. It's just madness all over the place.
Yeah, it was just madness. Our number three seed, Arkham Horror.
Versus our number six seed, Smash Up, the obligatory Cthulhu expansion.
And number four seed, Elder Sign.
Facing our number five seed, Tides of Madness.
Yeah, not so fast. Granted, they don't all have madness, but a lot of them do.
But all of them had madness, just not in the name.
Right, exactly. the lone one that's the non-strange one is Elder Sign. That's kind of the outlier. Now, granted, Smash Up, but it says Cthulhu in the name, so
yeah, Cthulhu expansion.
Obligatory Cthulhu expansion. Yep. So,
but the thing about the obligatory Cthulhu expansion, it's got madness in the game.
That's
true. It's cards that get fed into your deck.
I forgot about that. That is a good point. That's just silly. All right. So let's get into it. We have some honorable mentions that we would like to bring up. Like I said, we normally bring up our watchers' honorable mentions, but we forgot to post them on Facebook.
Well, so that, and we weren't even sure if we were going to record today.
That's true. That's very true. So we have, I'll go ahead. Or actually, so we decide with the Coin of Doom.
Mm-hmm. Or in this case, the Coin of Madness.
The Coin of Madness, that's right. All right, I'll use a dime this time around because that's more maddening. All right, I'll start it off. My number three.
One second. Crit of Chaos, you think you're going to get lost? I think we're going to go mad with all the madness.
Right. Isn't that? No, wait, we don't have the copyrights for that. We're working on it. My number three. Pandemic Rise of Cthulhu. And that's because you haven't played this, right?
No, I have not.
Yeah. And that's why it wasn't on our list. It would have ranked high enough. I was just checking. I don't own it, but I have played that one. It's neat. It was the first pandemic that used a fictional theme as far as what it's going, and you're basically trying to stop it, stop Arkham from overflowing with cultists. Now, what was cool is that, unlike the regular pandemic, which has the four different diseases, this was also the first one that had a single disease, which were just the cultists. You ran out of those, you're done. And you also only had 24 spaces on the board, which is half as many as normal pandemic, too. But essentially, what they're trying to do is they're trying to overflow the board, take over Arkham, and raise an elder. You have to prevent them from doing that by closing gates, and stopping them and getting rid of them. I wanted to say treating, but you don't treat cultists. Yeah, it's fun. It's not super different. It's lighter, actually, because there's fewer pieces, but it works well. In normal pandemic, like right now, a lot of people, I think, don't want to play it anymore, at least not for a while. Just because
after having to live through one?
Yeah, because we just lived through one right now, where this is a good alternate. If you like the Cthulhu mythos and you like cooperative games, which a lot of Cthulhu games are,
or just the pandemic gameplay.
Yeah, the pandemic gameplay. It actually worked pretty well in it. I did have a really fun time playing it, and that's why I am bringing it up. My number three, Rise of Cthulhu, Pandemic.
All right, so my number three here is actually something I haven't played. It's something that's intrigued me, and I go back and forth because it's made by, or it's inspired by Martin Wallace's A Study in Emerald. And I go back and forth with Martin Wallace games. I really like some. I've only played a few, and it's just like it's hit or miss. But this one looks interesting, and that is Australia with a Z instead of an S for some reason. Now, I've looked at it. It's a set in 1930s, I want to say, like right before World War II. You're doing a lot of construction. From what I'm reading here, it also has like action retrieval, hexagon grid, network and route building. Your military units trying to protect from an old one waking up. So it looks interesting. I just don't know. I've played a lot of Cthulhu games, as you can see here, that I don't know if I need another one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it looks fun, but I've never actually gotten the chance to purchase it. I've never found it in the wild to purchase. And even then, I don't know if I would.
Our local Barnes had it, but it was never on sale.
And that's what matters. If it was on sale, I'd consider it.
I'll try anything if I can catch a deal on it.
I bring over free games all the time. And you're not always that excited. Yeah. All right.
Because they're not free.
My number two was another retheming of, I call it a modern classic, but they took the original theme, which was fairly non-existent, and added a Lovecraft theme onto it, which is also kind of non-existent. That's Lovecraft Letter. And they took Love Letter and added Cthulhu into it. Now, here's the thing. Lovecraft Letter works pretty well. There was a lot of times when Love Letter was going wild and everybody was getting super excited about it that they ended up making Love Letter this and Love Letter that and like a bunch of different versions, but essentially all it did was maybe change one tiny mechanism or add just a theme painting on to the actual thing. Like, I mean, Batman Love Letter does not make sense. It really doesn't, because you're not handing a love letter to somebody, you're punching them in the face. You know, it just never made sense for anything. Lovecraft Letter, though, has a really neat mechanism with it. There was only ever a deluxe version. You're playing essentially Love Letter, but there's certain times that you might end up going mad. And when you do, then you're trying to make everybody else lose and go mad with you, in which case you win, which is kind of the theme with a lot of Lovecraftian stuff and Cthulhu mythos. It makes sense. It's a cool little wrinkle to that. It's not just another added mechanism. It really does turn the base Love Letter into a really interesting design. Daniel, I think you should try this at some point in the future. I know you're not the biggest fan of Love Letter. I know you appreciate it, but I think this is one that I've swayed a lot of people on. That's Lovecraft Letter.
No, I've looked into it, and don't get me wrong, I would try it somewhere down the line. My only issue is, I've played a mess of Love Letter. It's something everybody always wanted to play for quite a few years. It was really big, and it's just, I don't know if I need a reskin. As you can see, probably behind me, just over my shoulder by the sorting hat, the box for Batman Love Letters over there. So I do own a copy of it, but I'll try it. Honestly, like I said, I'll try most games unless it's something I know I won't like. Like Kingdom Death Monster is not something I'm very intrigued to play at all. Yeah. But I'll try it. Let's see what happens. So yeah. My number two is a game that earlier in the year, without realizing it, this was my number one combo of designers, Eric Lang and Rob Davio. I played the game. I did not know. I thought it was just an Eric Lang game. But that is Cthulhu, Death May Die. And I had a blast with this one. I really enjoyed it. I only played it one or two times, if I remember correctly. It's fun. It's got a lot going on. And I do have to say, though, they went a little overboard with the minis. When you have no space in one room because it's just full of these giant minis and your character minis and you're going to fight out of that room, it's just crazy. And I'm like, it's cool to look at and it's fun. It's going to get people's attention, but it's just like there's so much going on that you're not really seeing how the game is going.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I do enjoy it. I had a good time with it. It's a fun game. What I really, really like about Cthulhu Death May Die, and seriously, a lot of people have issues with Cthulhu in general because of H.P. Lovecraft and who he was and how his character is. However, this is just using the gods, the old ones and stuff like that from H.P. Lovecraft lore, but they made their own story with it. This is their own campaign. Has nothing to do with any of the books. They made their own lore for it, and I really like that. So if you have an issue with any of those other games for that reason, then check this one out.
Cool. And my last one, I'm going to give a spoiler alert. So we'll limit this to about 2 minutes, and I'll tell you when. But if you do not want spoilers, I'm not even going to say what the game is. All I'm going to say, or I will say what the game is, but I'm not going to give away any part of the story or anything like that. But Daniel, you probably didn't know this about this game, and I know you've played this game, so it's technically a spoiler that there is Cthulhu elements in one of the campaigns. So if you don't want to hear about it, just shut the audio off for the next minute or two. All right, with that warning being said, Time Stories. And it's my number one honorable mention, and that's because Time Stories is a phenomenal game. I'm not going to say which one it is, but there is one of the campaigns, there's like 9, I think, total, that does have some Cthulhu elements in it. Have you played that far, Daniel?
Yeah, I totally forgot about that, but yes, I have. Yes.
And I don't even think it's listed on, in it might, the expansion might be listed on BoardGameGeek, but I don't think it is. I think it should be, but then that would be super spoiler if it did. So I'm glad it doesn't at the same time. And that's because I love Time Stories. But that being said, that's the end of my spoilers. I think it's a phenomenal game. But yes, it does have some Cthulhu elements in it and one situation. That's all for me.
No, I don't disagree with you. That actually, yeah, no, I remember playing through that. Yep. And I just sent you which one it was. So very wrong about games. Yes, we did disappear for a little bit, not for reasons that we wanted to. The podcast still went up. It's just we were having internet issues.
Yeah. But thank you for joining us. So wrong. We're still very wrong. Glad to have you back.
And finally, my number one is one I talk about all the time, so I'm not going to go into too crazy aspect of it. And that is Arkham Horror LCG. That is my go-to LCG game. And I really, really enjoy it. It's got a lot going on. Right now, I'm still working on the second cycle. I'm going to have to skip the third cycle because you can't find it without paying an exorbitant amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been fun. I really enjoy it. It's my go-to solo. I've said it before, but that's my go-to solo. I bust it out when I just want to play for 45 minutes. Easy cleanup, easy pickup. There's so many expansions out there. My only thing is, just because of the two cycles I have to buy a new box to store everything. Like one of those Hobby Lobby art crates or something like that, just because there's just so much just in those two alone. Yeah. But yeah, no, I had a really good time with it. It's a really good game. If you get a chance to play it, have fun with it. Just know some of the cycles you might not be able to get into because they aren't in print, or if you do, you're going to have to pay a lot of money. Like the one that I'm the third cycle, which is, I think, the Path of Carcosa. It's easily to get the full cycle is $150.
No thanks.
Exactly.
I don't spend that much for games. No way. Ignore the all of anyway. Yeah. No way. Not a chance. No,
I've seen how you get games. You don't pay $150 for one thing.
True.
If you're paying $150, it's because you got like 150 some odd different things coming in.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's true. It's normally per dollar. Game per dollar is my exchange ratio. That's what I try to go.
Pretty much.
Oh, that's silly. All right. Are you ready to get into the debate, Daniel?
Oh, I am. It's been a while since we had a nice little debate here on stream. So, yeah.
Yeah. Streaming debates. I love it. Let's get it. This is right off the bat. We're getting weird. All right. Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition versus Tower of Madness. Two very, very different games.
Before we go into it, do you want to explain the criteria that we're going to be going through?
Yeah, I guess that would help. It's been too long since I've done this. Yeah, we rank them on 5 different criteria every time we do these debates. There is 5 categories that we choose, each one with 3 subcategories. We'll explain very quickly. The first one is ease of play. How simple it is to play, how easy it is to get to your table, likelihood, and which ones cause the least amount of analysis paralysis, as we call it.
As well as the next criteria is replay value. The length of time and the scaling of the game. Does it play for very long? And we're going to be talking a lot of very long games here in a minute. As well as the minimum number of plays does it take to get the full experience. And finally, the expandability of the game. Is there already existing expansions? Up to one future possible expansion or expansions that are coming out that have been confirmed by designer or publisher.
Yep. Next one is art and production. Super simple. How good is the art? How good are the pieces? And but most importantly for us, how good is the graphic design? Is it icon heavy? Or is it all words and blocks of literature? Depends on the game. And how well does it suit for us colorblind folk, which Daniel and Daniel are both?
Yep. Next on our list here is meaningful choice. And this is broken down as impact on other player strategies. Any choices you make, does it affect the other players, as well as the impact on your long-term strategy? And this goes with the next criteria. If you're making arbitrary choices, is it really you moving along the game, or is it just your choices? So does arbitrary choices make impact on the gameplay?
And the final one is game immersion. How well does the theme match the mechanisms, which this is going to be a really important category in this debate? How well does the game allude to those stand-up moments, the times where everybody stands up in victory or one person, and memorable times throughout it? And finally, I forget.
Memorable player interaction, table talk.
Player interaction, that's right. Thank you for saving me there. I'm actually going off script right now. Player interaction, how well does the theme draw you in to role-play your characters? Like, do people naturally want to go, talk like a pirate in a pirate game? Versus an abstract strategy where how well are you going to be focused? Not so much how well does the game make you interact, but how well you're willing to because of the theme.
So, yeah, that's it. So, you ready to start this up? Mansions of Madness versus Tower of Madness and the category of madness.
All right. Category. This is the madness bracket. All right. So, Daniel, go ahead and bust out the Cup of Doom. And I have the Coin of Doom. Well, the Coin of Madness, sorry, my mistake. And Daniel, you will be starting us off on this first one. Mansions of Madness versus Tower of Madness.
And it's funny because I got the one I least remember, Tower of Madness. Now, I do have to say this. I did play it once. I do remember it vaguely. There's a lot going for this game. And just reference, Kurt Covert of Smirk and Dagger is a friend of the show. We have interviewed him on here before, so we're going to try to give this as much due as it deserves, but it's going up against a really good game. And so going down our list of criteria, Towers of Madness is, if you remember a game growing up called Kerplunk, where you're pulling things out and you're trying to make sure the marbles aren't falling, well, what better game to put the theme on for is Tower of Madness. As you were mentioning earlier, it's some dice plays. You need to get 1, 2, 3. You got to push your luck aspect of it. I remember that. And you're either not wanting to go Madness or going Madness and winning the game. There's a lot going on. I do love the push your luck aspect of it. It's very fun. There's a lot going on. And so, and what can I say? That tower is incredible. If we're talking art and production right there alone, this should win it, because that production is top notch. The little sticks that you get in Kerplunk are tentacles in this game. They're really nice. They're really good pieces. I'm not going to lie, this is probably my second least favorite game on this list. I like it, but it fits the theme, but not as well as some of these other games.
And you know what's interesting? This is probably my second or third most favorite on this list, because it's really up there. I mean, it's just silly. The whole point of it, it's a Cthulhu theme. It's silly. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. I'm going to have more to say about it here in a minute, because my argument is going to be for Mansions of Madness, which, in all honesty, this is the quintessential Cthulhu game. It took everything from a lot of the games that Fantasy Flight already did well. It took the theme of Arkham Horror. It took a lot of the mythos from there. It created a technology-based app integration for it. So the storyline is brilliant. And it can constantly be added to without the need of new components, which sometimes they will make scenarios for it. Everything is modular. The pieces themselves are mostly pretty good, you know. I have a problem with the stands a little bit myself, but that's a minor thing. It's just a small argument, because I don't like the way the stands cover up information. They kind of had to produce that way. But the app integrates puzzles. It has fun integration. But then really, your turns are really simple. You're just kind of moving around or like exploring things. Just interacting. Sometimes there'll be puzzles. Sometimes there'll be monsters that you fight with. That's really about it. It looks way more difficult than it actually is.
It will play a little bit longer for some people. Just be aware of that. Lot of Madness here. Tower of Madness will be the shorter game, but Mansions of Madness is a really, really good one.
Yeah. Just because you already kind of said it, it is kind of the granddaddy of it. You know, it's very simple, but Mansions of Madness has a lot going for it. And with the campaigns, I think it will have to move on.
Well, the thing is, Mansions of Madness does not have campaign. It's scenario-based. So you're just playing different scenarios as you go through. You're thinking the campaign of the Lord of the Rings reskin. That's true, campaign.
True. That's true. Well, I mean, don't they follow a storyline, if I'm not mistaken?
Not really.
Okay, well then, scenario-driven. But I do want to give more of a shout out to Tower of Madness, just because I really love the push your luck in it. I love the fact that everything turns. Everybody's trying to get the most points by getting these, you know, Cthulian locations, and you're basically pushing your luck with these dice. But when you pull that marble, some good thing, or the tentacles from the tower, some good things happen. Some bad things might happen. You might destroy the world. It happens. But if you get a certain number of madness marbles, you go crazy. And what's funny is that when you go mad in this game, then if you're the one who causes the end of the game, like normally you can't win at that point. You're technically eliminated unless you cause the end of the game, and therefore you win instead, regardless of the points, because you just ended the world because you've gone mad and you're a cultist. That's amazing. That's hilarious.
I don't disagree with you. I find it silly fun. It's really good, silly fun. So I don't hate any of the games on this list here. Usually there's a couple I don't like. I actually really enjoy all of these. I know there's one that you don't like on this list.
Yes.
And that's because of the game itself.
Right. Right. Exactly. There is one that I just genuinely don't like, and I'll probably be the one to get it. But do you agree Mansions of Madness moves on?
Yeah, Mansions of Madness is just, I feel bad for Towers of Madness. Lots of Madness here, yeah, because it just, it went up against a juggernaut, in all honesty.
Yeah, really, I think this could have beaten about half of them. I really do, because it's super thematic and the components are great and it's good fun. It really does have those stand-up moments where one person pulls a tentacle, nothing happens, another one does it, and half of the marbles fall out.
Yeah,
everybody loves that when that happens. Yeah, believe it or not, there are a couple that I don't like. Phew. All right, so Mansions of Madness moves on. Our next round, the Battle of Cthulhu Games.
It's Horror versus Madness this time.
Horror versus Madness, that's right. Eldritch Horror versus our number 7 seed, Mountains of Madness. Another serious fantasy flight campaign style, or not campaign, but like cooperative game versus a completely silly and absurd game. With my style. And Daniel, I'll be starting off this argument. Please don't give me Eldritch. Please don't give me Eldritch.
Please I hope to God you get Eldritch.
I hope I don't get Eldritch. Don't give me Eldritch.
One here.
Don't you tell me I got Eldritch. All right, I'll do my best. A lot of people like this game. I'm going to throw out another statistic. A lot of people like Monopoly, too. But a lot of people like this game because you're working together. A lot of people work together in a lot of things, like work. You know, like that thing you have to go through 40 hours a week. You're all working together for the same objective. In this game, you are effectively trying to, you're trying to close the gates and solve whichever horror is happening at the time, I think, or whatever elder. You're trying to prevent him from overrunning the world. A lot of the thing is moving around, positioning yourself in the right way, and then attacking different cultists or trying to go through like checks is what they're essentially called. In these checks, you roll dice, and if you roll certain combinations of dice, then that goes on. It's similar like Yahtzee, except less choice. But I can see why people do it, because it has that stand-up moment. There is ways to mitigate it. I'm being facetious, but you know, there are ways to mitigate that. My only problem with it is that it wasn't that bad of a game, but we played it for mostly 4 hours, which I wasn't ready to play a not that great game for 4 hours.
You know, it's not just that we played it for 4 hours. It was the last game of the night that we played for 4 hours. I had to teach it to you and one other player. Mm-hmm. It was a bit much. I think we started it like 9 o'clock at night. You're like, okay, let's get this off my shelf to play it. I'm like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. I love the game. Yeah, sure. We've come to the realization we cannot learn heavy games late at night. It's got to be middle of the day for us.
Yeah, the longer the campaign, we just need to start playing Towers of Madness, like when it's time to be done. Like it's like play Yahtzee or something, you know? Yeah, it's I don't know. Eldritch Horror, like I get why you like it, and I get why I didn't have fun. It's not because it's a bad game, and I will never claim that it's a bad game. I just did not enjoy my time playing it. With that being said...
I get it. I think a big part of why people have issues with this, and this is one of the reasons why I like Arkham Horror LCG a lot more, is you're really, really dependent on the luck. You're really dependent on your dice rolls. You only, unless you're blessed, you only have 2 dice, the faces that can help you, 5s and 4, sixes. Yep. Anything below that, you fail, in all honesty. Mm-hmm. And depending on your skills, you're only allowed to roll so many dice. So if it's a check of 3, or I need to get 3 successes, but I can only roll 2 dice, I'm going to fail it automatically. So there is a lot of luck based on that. I get why a lot of people don't like it for that reason. But this is a quintessential Ameritrash game out there. If you really want something that's very thematic, then Eldritch Horror is for you. However, I get to argue a game I think both of us like more than Eldritch Horror, and I own Eldritch Horror.
Yep.
And that is Mountains of Madness. We were talking about it with Towers of Madness, and you want silly. This is the silly game on the list. There is, and it's serious. You're working together. You're trying to go through this mountain stuff. That's the stuff I barely remember. It's the shenanigans that happen in this game that really makes it memorable. Yes, Mountains of Madness. There is so much madness in here. In this one, you draw these madness cards up every so often, and they have like some of the silliest things, like you cannot speak, or you cannot use your thumbs, you can only use your fingers. You have to go to the end of the room when it's not your turn and talk to the people and stuff like that. There is so much silliness in this game that I don't remember much of the gameplay, because just I was laughing too hard about some of the shenanigans we were going through this. And if I remember correctly, this is a co-op, correct? We're working together.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. You're working together to meet a certain goal or criteria. But then sometimes you can't communicate with each other very well. There's one point where one person couldn't say a specific word, but it's a word that we use a lot. And so it was quite interesting how we try to, oh, wait, something's going on over here. He's not saying something. What's going on? And if someone calls you out on it, like with me, I couldn't use my thumb. So I was holding my cards like a Vulcan grip over here for I could see what they're doing. And they're like, "What? Why are you holding your cards like that?" I don't know what you're talking about. I'm holding my cards just like how everybody else does.
The rules explicitly state you're supposed to ignore what you're doing and act like it's not happening because you're going mad. It's normal to you. I love that. And see, what makes this good, and my argument for it, and what makes it so creative, is that you have a strong game behind it. You're all trying to pitch in certain, like, amounts of tools, and you can't really speak about it anyway. Like, it might need like a value 4 weapon, or it might need like these that you play through cards and you can't discuss, and you're all playing them face down anyway. But then on top of that, as you get more and more mad, you start doing these silly things and you're trying to act like they don't, and they do hinder your ability to play effectively, you know, like because you're allowed to discuss like what you have. It's like, oh yeah, I have quite a bit of tools, so I can take care of that. You know, I feel like I could do this alone. But if you have to answer or talk in only questions, that gets a little more difficult.
Now, I don't disagree with you. I was looking through our criteria real quick. And honestly, I have Mountains of Madness moving on.
I would say so, too. And that's mainly because the actual production of this, I feel, is better than Arkham Horror. Eldritch Horror. Because the productions are actually really strong in this. Like, you know, the board itself is a beautiful layout. The pieces look great. You know, I think the graphic design in Mountains of Madness is genuinely better. And I do mean that. Eldritch Horror is fine. It has the old rustic, you know, dirty look that you'd expect, but Mountains of Madness really pops. The only thing I have bad to say about Mountains of Madness is that it looks like a very serious game. I have it right over here over my shoulder. The cover looks epic and it looks like a very serious heavy game, and it's not until you open it up and you play it that you're like, wait a minute, hold on.
Yeah, no, I was not expecting it to be as silly as it was by that box cover. The box cover is deceiving. I was expecting like some cartoony image or something like that for the game, but no, it is deceiving. So the three I have Mountains of Madness winning is ease of play. It's much easier to play than Eldritch Horror.
Meaningful choice.
Art and production, I agree with you, as well as game immersion. Those are the three I have it winning. Now, okay, Don't get me wrong, I really like the art and production in Eldritch Horror. Yeah. It's just bland, I guess you could say, compared to Mansions of Madness.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just cardboard tokens, really. It's like, doesn't have the minis. Everything is kind of chintzy. You know, it's not bad. It's good. It's good quality. It's Fantasy Flight, so it's always good quality.
Yeah.
It's just, there's nothing overwhelming where Mountains of Madness, it's a neat looking design. So Mountains of Madness moves on, and we'll be facing against Mansions of Madness in the next round.
More and more madness.
All right.
Okay, moving on to our 3 and 6.
That's right. Our 3 and our 6 is Arkham Horror, the board game, versus Smash Up, the obligatory Cthulhu expansion.
And specifically, we're saying Arkham Horror 2nd edition, I want to say.
Yes.
Because we do not know. There is a difference with the way third edition plays, and we both of us haven't played it.
Right. Right. Which is ranked just slightly higher. So it's all good. Yeah. All right. And you'll be starting us off. The coin of madness has spoken.
Guess which one you get to talk about?
Probably Smash Up.
Because I get Arkham Horror. Because okay. I'm starting, you said, right?
Yep.
Arkham Horror is mine, so Smash Up is yours.
Off to the races.
All right, so Arkham Horror. Everything we said about Eldritch Horror could pretty much be said the same about Arkham Horror. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of expansions. You're closing gates. The difference is in Eldritch Horror, you're going around the world, whereas Arkham Horror, you're literally in Arkham City, going through like to the precinct and the university, Miskatonic University and stuff like that. It's a really good game. There is, I guess, it's actually a little bit more difficult than Eldritch Horror, because a lot of the rules they streamlined in Eldritch Horror to the point where they streamlined everything in the third edition. It's also another very long, grandiose Fantasy Flight game. Another epitome of Ameritrash here. And there's a lot going on in this one. Some of the arts and components are really nice, but it's Fantasy Flight nice, so it's not like they're over the top like you get with some of the Star Wars games. It's just your cardboard pieces. In fact, a lot of the stuff I've seen in this game is because people have upgraded the game with stuff that they can get off Etsy or 3D printers and stuff like that. So it's a bit interesting to me that I really like this one, and it's a very solid game. I just like Smash Up more because it's quicker.
Well, up to me then. I actually like Smash Up less, and that's which is surprising, because it seems like the kind of game that I would like. And a lot of other Paul Peterson games that I've played that have a silly idea is that he's made a lot of really fun card games that actually have pretty meaningful thought but are a blast to play. And this is no different. The people who like Smash Up like it for a very specific reason. Because in Smash Up, you take different factions and you take two of them and shuffle them together, and then they work in different ways. Like, so in the base Smash Up, you might have robots and you might have aliens. Another person might have zombies and, I don't remember, garden gnomes, something like that. And they've made so many different expansions. Each expansion has four, generally speaking, has four factions that you can shuffle in with any other Smash Up sets, or you can play it as a two-player version where you take two of them, smash them together. The obligatory Cthulhu expansion is either their first or second expansion, which now they've reached about 15.
No, second.
Yeah, it was number two, right?
Yeah, because yeah. I think Awesome Level 9000 was the first.
Right, exactly. And so everything was very much, instead of having four very different factions based on the theme, they just had one theme and had technically four factions based off of that. I mean, it was okay. It worked for what it was doing. You know, it's a fine expansion. If you like Smash Up, people rank that one pretty high, honestly, as far as...
It's a solid expansion.
Yeah, it's really good. It's just, I don't know. I'm just not a fan of Smash Up, personally, which is surprising, just because it takes a really long time, and it's okay.
Smash Up, I have to say this flat out, is best with three. Don't play it with two. Don't play it with four. Play it with three. It just moves a lot quicker. It's my go-to three-player game, in all honesty.
That makes sense. That makes sense. You know, I'm pretty much even on either of them. I could carry either way.
Let's break it down.
Is good. Huh?
Let's break it down then.
Let's break it down. Easier to play.
Smash Up.
Okay.
Art and production? Arkham Horror.
Yep. Replay value.
Now, are we counting all the Smash Up expansions? Then it's got to go to Arkham Horror.
Yep. I wouldn't count it. Would you count it? I mean, it's an expand alone, right?
But yeah, it's expand alone. About that. I would say let's not count it.
Okay, fair enough. So Arkham Horror, and then we have Game Immersion.
This is where I'm a bit torn. If I have to give it to somewhere, I would give it to Arkham Horror. Just because Smash Up basically is draw some cards, play some cards kind of thing.
Okay.
Sounds good. And see what happens. The cards are very thematic about what they're doing, but if you put it up with some of the other expansions in Smash Up, like the Ghost or something like that, it kind of will take you out of it.
Yeah. Okay. Then that gives it to Arkham Horror. Moving on. So far, only one non-fantasy flight game has moved on. And finally, our last round, we have another madness coming in. It is Elder Sign, the dice version of Arkham Horror, basically, versus Tides of Madness. Probably the lightest game out of everything here.
Yeah, really? Who's going?
Huh?
Who's going?
You're going first.
Let's see if I'm going mad or I'm rolling some dice.
Probably both.
Rolling some dice.
All right.
All right, so Elder Sign. Looking at this list, would probably be the one I would play the most out of all of these games because it plays really quickly. Not as quickly as you think a Yahtzee clone would play. This one can last a little bit. But it's probably the one I would play the most out of here just because it can go pretty quickly, though I do like Tides of Madness as well for its quickness. Elder Sign, as I said, it's basically Yahtzee. You're rolling some dice. You're trying to investigate this area, going into other worlds and stuff like that. You're trying to collect enough Elder Signs to stop whatever big bad's going to come out. We'll just say Cthulhu for this time. So you'll need like 10 or 12 Elder Signs before Doom Tracker opens up in the Mythos phase. Some monsters will give you doom. It's a lot more random than you would expect because you're pulling monsters out of a bag, you're rolling some dice. But when it comes down to it, you just go to a location, you roll some dice, you set some dice, and you keep going and see if you can complete a card. If you do so, you get some sort of reward off of it. If you fail, you get something negative out of it. I like the ability, like if you're in a location and you know you're not going to pass it, you can lock a die on your personal character for another player can go there and do the same thing and use the die that you locked in place for them to help you use it. I also like the fact that some of the cards you have to do in order. So if it's got an arrow pointing down, you have to do this way. You got to go straight down. Sometimes you can do it any way you want. Other times you have to do it in order. If a monster comes up, sometimes you have to fight the monster first, and then you can start unlocking. The monsters will also give you rewards if you defeat them. It's real simple. It's a fun game. There's quite a few expansions for it. And it's probably I'd have to say it's my favorite out of this list.
Very cool. Wow. Yeah, it's definitely up there for me. This is in the top three for sure. I think it's because I like Mountains of Madness and Tower of Madness quite a bit, but this is definitely one that I bust out quite often. Tides of Madness, though, is an absolutely brilliant game in how it works. It's based off of Tides of Time. Yeah, where it's a drafting game, which the premise of a drafting game is you have a hand of cards. You're going to be picking one of them, and you're going to pass the rest of your cards to the next player. Then you'll get the other one from the previous player, pick another one, and you do that until everybody's picked out of these hands that are rotating. What makes this different than most is, first off, the cards score in very different ways. Certain cards, like we were talking about during the Spiel des Jahres explanation with Fantasy Realms, some cards score based on how many certain symbols you have or how many different of the categories you have, or if you have a certain number of points just by themselves, or if you have like a set of things, then they score points. And so each time you're playing it, you're trying to gauge how am I going to work out the most number of points and which ones I'm going to keep for my opponent. Because the last final wrinkle in this explanation that makes it totally different, this is one of the few games that's drafting for only two players. That's it. Me and my opponent are going to draft these cards, which is normally terrible in a drafting game, honestly. Mm-hmm. But this is, it's designed for it. So I'm
going to know. It's designed well.
And it's designed well. When I pass you my hand of cards after that very first pick, I know exactly what you have and what's coming back to me on my next turn. I'm going to be able to play this out. and I'm going to be able to count the cards, and I'm going to be able to figure out and hopefully out-strategize you and score the most points. I want to say it's broken. I've never seen it be broken. Now, Tides of Madness takes that game and adds the Cthulhu theme onto it, where you can actually go crazy, or I'm sorry, go mad, and make it that extra little wrinkle of how you play. Because if you go mad, then that could be a good thing, unless both players go mad. Yeah, I don't remember exactly how it lays out, but I love the way it works. Now, between Tides of Time and Tides of Madness, I prefer Tides of Time, just because I thought it was a little simpler. But either than that, it's still a solid design. Is there one that you would pick over the other one?
Elder Sign?
Yep. Yeah, I would say so. I think Elder Sign should move on as well. Tides of Madness is a really brilliant game, but I think it needs to move on.
No, I agree. I just think Elder Sign is a better game, I guess you could say. The art's really nice in it as well. The production, the dice are really nice in it. What else would I say? I don't know. You just get more into the game. Like, if we're talking like game of immersion and talking about game immersion, it really gets you into the feeling more so than Tides of Madness, because basically all you're doing is looking at the cards.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. Then Elder Sign moves on. So we have three Fantasy Flight games and one yellow game.
Well, in all honesty, I'm not surprised Fantasy Flight has done Cthulhu-based games to death.
Yeah, I agree. All right, tell us how many votes that they would have gotten, except we're going mad, so we don't have
zero, zero, and zero.
All right, let's go into the next round. We have our semifinal round, Mansions of Madness versus Mountains of Madness, the tongue twister round. Daniel, you're starting us off again. Boy, the coin's
got mad.
Yeah, the coin's got mad. Normally doesn't pick.
Okay, let's see. I have to actually read this one. I got Mansions of Madness.
Okay.
Gives my handwriting.
You just saw the of madness part?
Yeah, I saw of madness. I'm like, wait, which one is this? What mansions? Okay. All right, so Mansions of Madness, I think, should move on. I just think it's the better game, as much as I love Mountains of Madness. Great, silly game. This, if we're just going on game immersion alone, this is giving me It's giving me the feel of playing a Cthulhu game. The app really is great integration. It sets the tone. It sets the theme. You get that ominous feeling just by listening to the app. Not to mention the puzzles are well integrated. You mm-hmm. feel like you're talking to a certain character if you're talking to a character, or you're searching a room and something's going on. There's one scenario in this game that really me and Bryce have talked about it, is that you are being swarmed by a mob when you're an Innsmouth, and there's no fighting them because they're too powerful. And so you're running, you're feeling that tension because of the integration of the app, as well as what you're doing on the board, because you're trying to run away from them. And it's so good. Just on game immersion alone, I think it wins it. Going through it, I think ease of play would go to Mountains of Madness, but when we're talking about graphic design and art and production, as nice as Mountains of Madness is, because of that app integration and the way the boards play and interchangeable, I think there's just too much going on for Mansions of Madness for it not to move forward. I give it just three. I would give it art and production, I would give it game immersion, and I would give it replay value.
For which one?
Mansions of Madness.
I don't give game immersion to it, because I think personally Towers of Madness, Mountains of Madness would get game immersion, and that's because of one very big thing: the fact that you are forced to act like you're going mad but not acknowledge it, and that directly hinders the game. People play that up like brilliantly, and because of that, when you succeed at each of the levels, that makes it that much more rewarding. Mountains of Madness has way more stand-up moments, hands down, and way more player interaction because it's designed to bring that out in the players. Now, I'm not saying that that pushes it over. I personally think that Mansions of Madness definitely has art and production. No doubt about that. The minis are just phenomenal. I do also think that the meaningful choices goes to Mansions of Madness as well. But at the same time, I also think it's easier to play.
Really? Yes. Yeah, I could see that because the app integration just makes it so much easier to learn.
Yeah, puzzles are one thing, but really you have three actions on your turn. You either move or interact or fight. That's really it.
I mean, and I do have to say this about the app. It does help you, like, if this is the first game, it helps teach you how to play the game as well. So there's that integration as well.
Yeah. So with that being said, I do think that I would give the nod for immersion to Mountains of Madness because that's the whole design premise of the game, is to bring out that hilarity and the absurdity of going mad while trying to play a cooperative game at the same time. Because you're all just trying to get to the top of the mountain and get out of there. That's the only way you can do it. So, but that's really the only one that I definitely give it over the rest.
All right. So we're both in agreement, though, in different categories that Mansions of Madness should move on.
Yeah.
And eliminate Mountains of Madness.
That's right. That's the last madness we have. Will it last till the end? Will it be a madness overall? We don't know. That's the first time that we've agreed on the outcome, but for different reasons.
Yeah.
That's intriguing. All right. Our next round is going to be Arkham Horror versus Elder Sign in the final of the semifinals rounds. And now, finally, the Coin of Madness has chosen myself. Hopefully it gives me the game that I want.
It's mad at you for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, it likes your madness better. Arkham Horror. Yes, it's a cooperative game. It's a classic that stood time. You know, it's definitely the oldest out of all of these games because they've gone through three iterations. And from what I understand, the newest one is pretty fantastic. Just the way everything's modular and how it works and it's streamlined. But this was kind of like what put Fantasy Flight on the map. This one was of them, the Fantasy Flight game. And that's because so many people who are into games who didn't want to play Candyland and Monopoly and all that stuff, they wanted to play real gamer games, really thematic things. This was the one to do because this outstayed all of the other ones. It has that standing legacy. There's a reason it's still on this list and ranked as high as it is. Right. So that's my argument for it. Personally, I don't like it as much as Elder Sign, but there are nods to it that we'll give. As far as game immersion, this definitely beats Elder Sign.
Yeah, I'll give you that hands down. Also give you that it'll take meaningful choice out of Elder Sign too, because even though both are dice rolls, your most meaningful choice really is my character really good to go to that location that just flipped up? That's it. That's really your only meaningful choice. Other than that, you're beholden to the dice roll. At least with Arkham Horror, you're gathering resources. You can trade resources. Hey, why don't you go to that location because you're better at it, and I'll go investigate over here. That's where your meaningful choice is. Other than that, I think Elder Sign is easier to play. I think both of them actually are almost equal on expansions. I think Arkham Horror slightly beats it, but I think Elder Signs could hold more, especially with some of the expansions. Minimum number of plays to get the full experience. I don't know. This is tough now that I'm looking through our criteria here. So ease of play. Which one do you think wins that one?
Elder Sign.
Hands down.
Yeah.
Replay value.
Arkham.
Yeah, I'll give you that one. Because I think the only one that Elder Signs gets is the scaling.
Yeah. It gets the scaling because there's more expansions and what's our other category on that?
Minimum number of plays for the full experience.
Yeah. But, well, actually, that's tricky because, like, in third edition Arkham Horror, yes, it's a modular board, where technically Elder Sign, it's always modular because it's always cards.
Yeah, the thing is, with Elder Signs, the only difference is really is, like, some of the bad stuff that the big bad can do and...
But there's multiple of them, too. There's multiple
of them in the base game of Arkham Horror. I mentioned the expansions.
Yeah, that's true. The Elders, yeah. Okay, that's fair. So,
Arkham Horror. Game immersion, you said Arkham Horror.
I think so.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with you on that one. So, art and production.
Ooh. Well, that would go to Arkham Horror, because the little player pieces, those little tiny tokens, those are frustrating.
Those are annoying. Yeah, I agree with you. In fact, I also get meaningful choices to Arkham Horror as well, so it's 4-1.
Okay. Well, I don't give meaningful choices to it personally, but 3-1, 3-2 is still, this still moves on. Arkham Horror versus Mansions of Madness.
Oh, the horror.
Yep. Oh, the madness. All right.
All right. Our final madness versus our final horror. Which one moves on?
And this, I don't think we'll need to debate too much, but in the way we do our final round, we don't pick a side. We don't argue our case for each side. We simply break down by the categories. And this, I feel, is going to go pretty quick, just because Mansions of Madness was really built off of Arkham Horror, and they designed it to be a dungeon crawl Arkham Horror, where Arkham Horror was just a big, kind of grandiose horror cooperative game. With that being said, do you have a quick pick for any of the categories?
I actually have two categories winning outright. Okay. I have Ease of Play going to Mansions of Madness, as well as Art and Production.
Art and Production. I completely agree. Meaningful choice. I would give that to Arkham myself.
Yeah, there is just a lot more meaningful choice in Arkham.
Yep. Yep, okay. Replay value. There is way more content.
There is only, as I'm remembering, because I talked to Bryce about this just recently too, there's two expansions to Mansions of Madness, full expansions where you're getting like the minis, and then there's a couple scenarios that you can buy on the app itself that already use what's there. But I think there's, what, 7 expansions for Arkham Horror?
Yep. Yep, there's significantly more. Yeah, so replay value goes to Arkham Horror. But game immersion, I think, is what's going to tip it in the favor of Mansions of Madness.
And I agree with you that, because I really fit the theme matching the mechanism on this one a lot more than Arkham Horror.
Yes. They both roll dice kind of to see the results, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the advantage that Mansions of Madness has over Arkham Horror is that app integration. Not only does it create the atmosphere, it provides the puzzles, and it does all of the stuff that would take you out of the game, like the upkeep of keeping track of monsters' hit points and trying to figure all that. No, it's all right there in the app. You just click a couple buttons, and then it keeps track of all of it. And it reveals the story to you in a way that that the board game Arkham Horror could never do.
No, I don't disagree with you. And then I just feel, again, that the memorable moments, you feel that tension just because of that app integration, that the sound. If you got it hooked up to a Bluetooth speaker, when you're running away from the mob, it actually makes the noise of the mob chasing you. And so it's there's a lot going on. And I just feel there's more table talk in Mansions of Madness that make you want to role play than compared to Arkham Horror. Because at that point in time, when you're playing Arkham Horror, you're playing with some actual gamers. That can be a little much. I mean, the two times I played this game, I wanted to throttle some other players at the table.
Yeah. Yeah. It really brings that out.
When we're talking like tabletop quarterback, we mentioned it before, especially a lot of the alpha gamers and stuff like that. This is the game that bred them. This is where it started, really, that I can remember. This game itself.
Exactly. Don't play that game with Daniel. Exactly. Couldn't agree more. Oh my goodness. Yeah. But we're going to give the win to Mansions of Madness. Congratulations, Fantasy Flight. You beat Fantasy
Flight. You're a fish fight.
You beat them like 3 times just to get here. But that is the best Fantasy Flight
game. No. Mansions of Madness, actually, this is the only time it faced Fantasy Flight the entire way through. It took out Yellow and it took out Smirk and Dagger.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's the only time it faced any other. Oh, that's silly.
And we found the madness.
We found the madness. The best Cthulhu themed game. Ooh, that was a good one.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Still not as good as Mountains of Madness. We need to get that to the table again.
Yeah, it's been a while. I don't know. I really do. If I have to look at this list, like I said, I'd probably play Elder Sign more than anything else on this list just because it goes by so much quicker. If I have to pick another game off this list, it'd be Mansions of Madness.
Mansions?
Mansions of Madness.
Yeah. That works. Yeah, if I had to only pick one of these, I'd probably pick Elder Sign as well.
Out of all the games I've mentioned with this theme, the game I would pick out of this is one my honorable mention, the one I've talked about a lot, is Arkham Horror LCG. I get that love for it, the Cthulhu Mythos. It's such a short amount of time.
Yeah, and it's actually ranked higher than most of these. So that
actually, it was number one.
Yeah, it's not a dishonorable mention, exactly. So I just haven't played it. Maybe one of these years, you'll lend me your copy and let me play it.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
Probably not.
I'm in the middle of a campaign right now, all right?
Well, get it over with so I can play it. I have to play my games vicariously through you. I'll lend you all my own Nyrim and Oniverse games.
There we go.
Great. That'll be my collateral. Oh, goodness. We want to thank everybody for tuning in. Thank you, Creative Chaos, and So Very Wrong About Games. You guys are always awesome. We appreciate it when you join in. If you ever want to join us like they did, like our awesome viewers, join us at twitch.tv/everydayboardgames.
You can also find all video re-uploads on our official YouTube channel, Everyday Board Games 2020. And if you like what we do, please give us a subscribe, as well as liking the video, and comment down below what is your favorite game on this list that fits this category. Doing so helps us grow immensely on the platform. As well as all audio versions can be found on most podcast platforms under Everyday Board Games Podcast. This includes Spotify, Google, Amazon Music, and Podbean.
Have an idea for a future episode, or just want to reach out and say hi to us directly? You can email us at everydayboardgames2020@gmail.com.
As well as you can get in touch with us on our official Twitter account at EBG Podcast.
So we want to thank you for tuning in. As always, I've been your host, Daniel.
And I've been your host, Daniel.
And we want to thank you for listening to Everyday Board Games.
Have a good one.